We are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia in association with Rafa. Today we are in Alberobello.
Cozze ci tene cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, cozze ci tene cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci cora, se lo mangiano le femmine.
Well, that cork popping wasn't the sound of Caleb Ewan's bottle of Victory Asti Spumante popping on the podium. It was actually a rather nice bottle of Prosecco, Daniel, here at our wonderful recording location this evening.
Wrong part of Italy for Prosecco, but it doesn't matter, it's in line.
Well, I mean, they drink Prosecco in London. Do you go around London saying you're in the wrong part of the world to drink Prosecco? You probably
no, but
do,
we have, but we have many policies. We've been very fastidious on this Giro. We've got the mobile phone policy, and one of the policies, or at least one of the guidelines, is that we eat and drink locally. Alas, we've not managed it tonight. But we will try later, won't we?
Well, the owner of this very pleasant bed and breakfast where we're staying this evening has offered us. It would be remiss of us to decline a very kind offer on the basis that it's not local enough.
And anyway... Staying. We're staying, Lionel, in a masseria, which is, I gather, it's the sort of local word for an old stable, old, what do you call it in English, where they milk the cows?
Barn?
Barn, kind of, yeah, kind of. And we're also staying, well, we're staying in another one tomorrow, but I think we're out of Puglia tomorrow night and we're staying in Molise.
Well, there's plenty of time for some Puglia with dinner later. He's also brought us some snacks, some... bruschetta, so chopped tomatoes and olive oil on little rounds of bread, and the olive oil is made here, so you can't get any more local than that. So there we are. Should we talk about the Giro d'Italia?
Let's try. It's not easy. It's not been easy this week, has it?
Well, I don't know. I think we've done okay.
Oh, good news! They've got a table at the restaurant.
Oh, this is fantastic, listeners! You'll be very glad to know. That, we will eat this evening. That's good. Back to the cycling, yeah. Well, shall I run through what happened, or rather what didn't happen, in the Giro d'Italia today? Stage 7 from Castro Villari to Alberobello, 224 kilometres. It felt like a long day, didn't it, for them? We drove a fair bit of the course as well, didn't we, Daniel? It wasn't terribly inspiring. An awful lot of main road, dual carriageway. I mean, I know they had to get here. They're going very much... round the arch of the foot of Italy.
You're complaining that the Giro d'Italia is too long now?
No, I'm not complaining it's too long. I'm just saying that, you know, it was a stage of necessity. They wanted to finish in Alberobello, and this was the only way to get there. I just hope that the foot of Italy isn't ticklish, because if it is, it might well have got, you know, a little frisson as the riders pedalled their way across. It wasn't a stage packed with action, let's be honest about it, but that doesn't mean nothing happened at all. Three riders got into the first break, and the only break, Simone Ponzi, who was the other one? Giuseppe Fonzi, and it was
Poggio Bonzi.
It was Kazonchuk of Gazprom. I felt sorry for Kazonchuk because quite a big guy. He didn't get an awful lot of shelter from Fonzi. It was those two, Kazonchuk and Fonzi with an F, rather than Ponzi with a P, who were away for most of the time because Ponzi punctured. It wasn't because there was some kind of Giro rule about riders with very similar surnames not being allowed in the same break.
Ponzi in a break. Happy days, hey, Lionel. Happy days.
Indeed, it was happy days. Well, they stayed away. They had a lead, and then they didn't have a lead. And then in the finale, Christian Corrin of Cannondale, he almost pulled it off. Well, he didn't really almost pull it off, but he had a go at trying to win on what we are now calling Davide Formolo Day, May the 12th, the two-year anniversary of Cannondale's last World Tour win. Fair dues to him, though, for having a go. Then came the sprint finish, and it was the big four, wasn't it? It was Andre Greipel in fourth, Sam Bennett in third, Fernando Gaviria in second, and Caleb Ewan in first. His first Giro stage win, his second Grand Tour stage win. No change overall. Bob Jung was in pink, Gaviria in Ciclamino, Polanch in blue as King of the Mountains. Jung also has a white jersey, which Adam Yates is wearing. But Daniel, 2 days on the Giro, 5 hours 35 in the saddle yesterday, today and 4 hours 58 yesterday. That's an awful lot of cycling for not a great deal of return.
No, we'll just, if we just concentrate first on the sprint finish, I was in Abu Dhabi a few weeks ago when Caleb Ewan celebrated prematurely and lost the stage to Marcel Kittel, and it was notable today that he kept sprinting right until the finish line, until he was over the finish line. And that was, well, he owed his victory to that because it was very, very close. It was one of those finishing or one of those finales where the riders didn't really get a look at the line until about 150 metres to go. There weren't dramatic bends in the last 600 metres, but it kind of twisted and turned a little bit. And consequently, the rider who was at the front or best positioned with about 150, 200 to go was always going to win. And whether that was planning or just intuition and instinct from Caleb Ewan, I'm not quite sure. There was a bit of beef in the finale between the Bora lead out train and the Quickstep lead out train. Riquezi of Quickstep and Selig of Bora had a bit of a tangle. From the overhead shots, it looked a bit like half a dozen of one, six of the other. Certainly, Riquezi was pretty aggrieved. Sam Bennett, who is Bora Hansgrohe's sprinter, stood up for his lead out man at the finish line. Here's what he said.
Rudy did nothing wrong. He was just holding his position. And the other guys are the ones with the problem.
Yeah, so there was Bennett saying that Selig had done nothing wrong. Riquezi didn't agree. Had a bit of a rant to Ciro, our friend Ciro's Cognamiglio. I know that I saw them deep in conversation shortly after the finish line. It was a kind of typical racing incident. There were no repercussions. As far as we know, no one has been disqualified, no action taken. But, you know, it's already been a good Giro for Gaviria, for Quickstep. And interesting, this battle of the two emerging sprinters. We've copped a bit of flack, haven't we? Deservedly so. It's always deserved when we cop any flack on Twitter about writing off Gaviria and maybe bigging up Ewan too much and then not writing off Ewan when we weren't bigging up Gaviria. So what's the state of play now, Lionel?
Well, the state of play at the moment is two for Gaviria in this race, one for Ewan. And you do get the feeling Ewan, well, he admitted it in the press conference. He said that the pressure had been building up. He won a stage of the Vuelta in 2015. And I think when we saw that and we've seen his speed, we thought that stages might come a little more readily for him. He was second at Bibbiani to Greipel in last year's Giro, and I remember that being a very close finish and his sense of disappointment because it was his last opportunity to win a stage in the race. I think that came towards the end of the second week, and then it was basically all mountains to the finish, and it was a sense of a missed opportunity. And then, of course, he wasn't in the Tour, and I don't think he rode the Vuelta last year either. And so yeah, it's been a reasonable time coming, this second Grand Tour stage win for Ewan. But what you said about the finish, Daniel, is absolutely right, because they knew it had this little kink in the corner. They knew it was narrow. Andre Greipel's been on social media this evening saying that, you know, it wasn't an appropriate finish for a Grand Tour stage. But I think in the circumstances, they just about got away with it, because really there's, what, half a dozen sort of first division sprinters here. It wasn't like it was all absolutely all out spread across the road with 20 guys all trying to win. It worked out okay, and really the finish line was on that corner, what, 150 metres to go.
Yeah.
The first person into that, and Ewan did well to cut the corner the way he did without impeding riders behind him. You know, that was a good move, very well timed, and he did say afterwards, you know, better to go early on that finish and get a good line, because it was going to be very, very difficult for, well, it was Gaviria, the man trying to come up round the outside. And it's been a good day for them. I saw Matt White this morning. He was looking very relaxed, sitting on a bench, listening to commentary of a rugby league match from Australia. I know nothing about Australian rugby league, so forgive me if I get this wrong, but I think he's a big Cronulla Sharks fan. They're a team from Sydney, and they were playing their local derby against the Dragons, mate.
Look.
And it was 18-14 with a few minutes to go. He was listening to that, and I just said, well, maybe that's going to be a good omen. Perhaps today will be the day. And he said, sure hope so, mate.
And I was listening to him, mate, at the finish line. He was talking about Caleb Ewan and today's stage win really being a burden off Caleb Ewan's shoulders.
Well, I think it's it's a relief because he's worked very hard to get here. And yeah, the first couple of sprints were pretty frustrating. And yeah, you'd be lying to say that it wasn't frustrating for him and the team. But yeah, his speed hasn't gone anywhere, and he just needed a clear run at the finish and a bit of luck, and he got that today.
And we always think of your team as a pretty boisterous, kind of happy-go-lucky bunch. Caleb always seems like a very calm, sort of tranquil kind of guy. Is that how he really is in and around the team?
He is. He is. He's not a talker. He is a pretty, for his age, he's quite a mature young fella, and he knows what he wants. And that's to be one of the world's best sprinters, and he's certainly on the way to achieving that.
Yes, Lionel, we talked there about the finish and it being slightly, well, complicated and slightly sinuous there as the riders came into Alvaro Bello. But if ever there was a, well, justification for having a slightly fiddly finale, it was today, because I thought it looked fantastic on television. We heard earlier in the Giro, Mauro Vegni, the Giro director, saying that he was really looking forward to the Alvaro Bello finish, and I thought it did look great. Manuel Quinciato was another rider I heard grousing at the finish as he came over the line. He was saying to another rider that it was a criterium-type finish, and that was not a compliment. But I think that there are times when finishes are dangerous, and you can't really see why an organiser has taken the route that way. But today, I think to finish in the middle of Alvaro Bello was absolutely worth it.
Yeah, it was. It was stunning, the little town there, and these conical roofs made of the local stone, very much a feature around here where we are. We're perhaps 12 kilometres away from Alvaro Bello, but it's still in evidence across the countryside here. And I suppose, though, it's perhaps an unwelcome reminder to the riders that they are kind of the, you know, they are the circus coming into town, and they're the performers, aren't they? They're the ones that have to get up on the high wire and on the trapeze and perform. And it's up to the ringmaster to decide where they go. And it's a tricky one, that. But I think because of the way the race was, like I say, if that had been a Tour de France finish, it would have been absolute chaos because the race is too big. There's too many riders all going for every place. Slightly different here at the Giro, and I think it was just about okay.
And Lionel, this week, if ever there was a week, that's been a reminder that 50% of the spectacle in cycling, and particularly grand tours, is the setting, the landscapes, the places we've seen this week, and we often forget it. But again, we heard from Vegni earlier on in the race about the story that he wanted to tell with this Giro, and the things that he wanted to show the world. And the story he wanted to tell about Italy. And the riders, sometimes they get the thin end of the wedge, don't they?
Well, the problem is, Daniel, I mean, this is the 100th Giro. It's going to show off the best of the country. It's trying to visit as many of the regions as it possibly can. The two islands, of course, at the beginning. But, if everyone's fallen asleep on the sofa and they miss the best of Italy on the TV, you know, it might end up being counterproductive. But shall we return to that?
Well, Lionel,
towards the end of the episode?
Shall we? Yeah, okay, you've convinced me.
Because I think it's time for a bit of a cultural interlude.
Hi, I'm Sarah Clark, Chief Marketing Officer at RAFA. We have a very vibrant, young, energetic organisation. I think people look to us to keep pushing boundaries and to keep pushing the sport forward. And we try to do that in lots of different ways. Obviously with the products that we create for people to wear, the content that we create to really inspire people to get onto their bikes. And a lot of people know this already, but we're very lucky. We give people until lunchtime on Wednesdays to go and get a long ride in, because you know that's very important for people to clear their minds and come back in with a really positive frame of mind. But it also means that they can test our products, because we're all ingrained cyclists at heart, so it allows them to sort of keep living the sport and keep living our product in the best way possible.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kits and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Good morning, my name is Giacomo. I'm from Civita. Civita is Arbres Italian Community. Allora, Arbres, praticamente Civita è un insediamento albanese, in quanto nel 1472, l'anno in cui fu fondata,
Civita is an Albanian settlement, and it was created in 1472 when refugees fled Albania, which was then under the control of the Turks, and made a new home here. The language we speak here is Arbresh, which is basically 15th century Albanian. The Albanian influence is still really strong, because Arbresh is commonly spoken here even today. It also comes through what we call Valihe, which are a festival of Albanian dances and songs that take place each Easter Sunday. These commemorate the liberation of Albania from Turkish rule.
Daniel, I have to say, a week in, you've taken charge of all of the booking in a sort of RCS style. You've decided exactly where we're staying, and I have to say, for consistently high standards, you are in the pink jersey. Last night in Civita, one beautiful town, we arrived at in the dark, but I could even tell at night, you know, how narrow the streets were, real sort of medieval feel to it. And then this morning, when I could see the views and the rooftops, it was absolutely fantastic. And again, another one of these strange, curious places that last year I remember the German, basically Germany in Italy, and last night was basically Albania in Italy. Very strange that these places kind of survive and stay how they are.
And we had a fantastic Albanian meal, didn't we? Albano Italian meal with some dolmsat, I think it's called, which is sort of pasta, sort of which looks more like a risotto.
Well, and it had the texture of risotto as well. And the man came out and showed us a little video on his iPad. Very much breaking the no screens at dinner time rule. I did notice but didn't say anything. And he showed us a video of how this dish is made. The flour is dribbled with oregano water and then sieved, and then the very fine flour is then stirred into tomato sauce, and it kind of congeals into little sort of almost pearl barley-ish, rice-ish blobs. And I actually couldn't tell quite what it was I was eating, because of the texture was so similar to rice or pearl barley. But yeah, to find out it was pasta, interesting.
I've got a great link here, Lionel. Talking of Albanians, Ergut Zupa, who we spoke to last year on the podcast, was doing the Giro last year. He's riding for Villa Triestina or Villa Celia Italia. And that team has, it got a real rocket from its director sportif, Luca Shinto. Got the hairdryer treatment yesterday. He's been ranting, a very voluble character, Luca Shinto, and he said to La Gazzetta yesterday that if it was up to him, he'd send them all home, because they hadn't been in any breaks, or they'd been in very few breaks. So kind of agreeing with you, Lionel, the smaller teams need to do more, and that is why Fonzie, I imagine, was out for 200 kilometres today.
Yes. If you haven't seen Happy Days, a TV programme, I think made in the 70s but set in the 50s, that won't mean anything to you. One just point of order on Villa Celia Italia, Willia Celia Italia. I've been calling them Willia. I've heard you call them Willia as well, Daniel, in my defence here, but the pronunciation police have been on, and in Italian it would be Villia, wouldn't it?
Correct.
We had a listener contact us on Twitter to clarify this. I noticed actually I haven't got his name in front of me, but I did notice, I looked at his avatar, he rides a Villia bike, so presumably has an interest. And he in fact said that some of his friends had been telling him he'd been pronouncing the name of his bike incorrectly by calling it Villia, and they cited me as evidence for the prosecution, and clearly I've got it wrong, so happy to correct that. Just on the sort of the type of racing we've had this week, Daniel, it was a gamble, really, wasn't it, with the route? It's not like they haven't given opportunities. Etna could have worked out differently if it hadn't been windy, but the race is in a bit of a slumber, isn't it? What's going to wake it up? When's it going to wake up? Will it be tomorrow, Saturday, stay to Peschici?
No, I think that Peschici. I think we're going to see a similar stage to what we saw yesterday, tomorrow, to Peschici. I mean, the finishes we've had there in the past indicate that. I think the GC riders will stick together until the final rise, which is quite a tough final climb. We'll talk about that later in the podcast. We obviously expect the first big sort out to come at Blockhouse on Sunday, and I'm sure there will be some element of sifting out and sorting the wheat from the chaff. But I don't think it will be definitive by any means, and it wouldn't surprise me if we still had six, seven, eight guys separated by a few seconds
on Sunday night, because I think there are a lot of time trialists or GC riders who are good time trialists in the race, like Geraint Thomas, like Tom Dumoulin, who will be suspect in the third week. But at this point in the race, I think they could well be able to live with the likes of Nairo Quintana. So I think we'll see more stalemate, and the Giro is really a victim of its own success this year in attracting so many big names, because everyone is just scared to move a muscle.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's so many riders all so close together. I said this a couple of days ago, it's a sort of reverse version of the stalemate you get in the final week of a Grand Tour. But at least then, once the sort outs happen, there are reasons for people lower down the GC to attack. At the moment, everyone's just sitting tight. Yeah, this opening week, Daniel, has been one for the purists, but a bit like a great test match, you know, it's not decided on the first day, and the Giro isn't going to be decided in this week, and we have to wait for it to come to life later on.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for supporting the cycling podcast. If you would like to get your hands on their goodies, gels and energy bars and powders and that kind of thing to help you with your performance, you can get 20% off. Go to scienceinsport.com and enter the code CPOD20. That's CPOD20. Daniel, what else have we got to talk about this evening before we go for our very fine dinner and perhaps a glass of Puglia?
Well, I think we mentioned the conical houses in Alberobello, the Trulli. There is, or we've also mentioned in the last few days, one famous Trullo, that's the singular of Trulli, in cycling, and that's the Trullo Volante, the flying Trullo. And that was Leonardo Piepoli. That was his nickname when he was a rider. Disgraced, of course, in 2008, really had a fantastic season, probably not surprisingly, as he was doped to the gills. and he won stages at the, I can't remember whether it was that year, he won stages at the Giro, but was riding very well at the Tour de France as well.
Yeah, didn't he and Ricardo Rico do a 1-2 at Hautacam, perhaps it was, in the Pyrenees? Yeah. Certainly Piepoli was going like a train, wasn't he?
And yeah, and then he was already coming towards the end of his career, and he subsequently, sure enough, tested positive for Chero, which is kind of a second generation EPO. We didn't hear much from him for a few years, and then he sort of resurfaced as a coach, and called the Trullo Volante because he's from, or he grew up in Alberobello. I think he was born in Switzerland actually, but grew up there, and we wondered whether he might make an appearance today, and sure enough, there he was mid-afternoon in the press room. And a small crowd of journalists slowly formed around him. I've spoken to him a couple of times over the last few years, and it's been fairly innocuous stuff. He's never really opened up. But today, he was really speaking, seemed to be speaking without any filter. And it was very candid, quite revealing. And, here's a bit of what he said.
Nunago, solo quell'atto lì ha fatto sì che la gente sa che quello che ago è doping. Prima non lo era.
The no needle policy coming in changed everything, I think. Just that measure immediately made it clear to everyone that everything in a needle was to be considered doping. Seems like such a trivial little thing, that rule, but psychologically it changes a lot. If you think about it, it's a nonsense. It wasn't exactly an act of genius. But psychologically, it changes everything. When I was a kid or a young rider, needles were just, well, part of your routine. It wasn't doping, it was recovery, or so they told you. But banning needles put a kind of mental brake on you immediately. Suddenly then, even a little pill could scare you, whereas once it seemed like a joke, because you knew that you recovered with a needle. So now young riders are growing up with a different mentality. In Armstrong's days, my days, there were kids who were already in this system at 14 or 15 years old, and who didn't even get to ask themselves these questions about needles and medicine. Also now, the teams operate a kind of anti-doping terrorism, and rightly so. A doping case is the only thing they absolutely can't justify. They can justify a bad season, but, well, I'm quite friendly with Eusebio Unzue, the Movistar manager, and he's been telling me this for years now. A positive dope test is the one thing they can't justify to a sponsor. One bad season, two, even three, you can still say a star rider got sick, they raced badly, you recruited the wrong guys, with some credibility vis-a-vis the sponsor. but nothing explains away a doping case.
Abbiamo sbagliato a prendere gli atleti giusti. Puoi giustificarlo. Un caso doping lo puoi giustificare.
Well, that was interesting from Pierre Pelli. Obviously, didn't have much to say about today's flat stage and sprint finish. But what's he up to these days? Is he? I heard he's coaching somebody.
Well, he is doing some coaching. He's coaching Filippo Bozzato, or he
wouldn't boast he says too much
he,
about
he mainly
that.
Goes out to eat with Filippo Bozzato. Doesn't really coach him. He coaches Angel Vicioso of Cattuja Losada from Cattuja, Andre Amador. He wasn't coaching him last year, but he's coaching him this year. And the one that really surprised me that I didn't know was Davide Formolo from Cannondale. But he was quite self-critical and quite open, and certainly spoke a lot about how he'd had to take responsibility, and was even sort of decrying the culture in Italian cycling, the sort of tolerance of dopers. In fact, I mean, he gave the example of where he's currently attending a course, I think, for director sportifs at the Italian Cycling Federation, and he said that he went to one particular seminar, and on the wall in the Italian Cycling Federation, whichever sort of regional department or office this was, there's a poster of him and Riccardo Ricco celebrating a win and holding hands as they crossed the finish line. I think it might have been the one in the Dolomites, the Tre Cime di Lavaredo, and he said this is utterly ridiculous. He could not quite believe what he was seeing, but the poster was there to show the value of great teamwork. And
it's a bit like the Argentinian Football Federation having a picture of Maradona punching the ball into the net against England in their foyer, isn't it? But there we are.
It is. And he talked a lot about how he thinks people can change, but you know, as we heard in the first clip, how the culture in cycling has changed. He talks about the Movistar manager, Eusebio Unzue, Piopoli rode for Unzue during his career. And I asked him, for example, if he blamed people like Unzue for not having protected him more in his career, and especially when he was a young rider, and protected him from some of the vices that were rampant in cycling at that time. And here's what he said to that.
No, anzi, secondo me mi ha protetto fin troppo. Beh, comunque, adesso io dico una cosa, io ho fatto quello che ho fatto.
No, I think Unzue maybe even protected me too much. Let me say one thing, I did what I did. Circumstances, situations, influences, whatever the reason, I can't sit here and expect people to come over and pat me on the back. If I've suffered a bit as a result of my actions, that's how it should be. If someone jumps a red light and kills a pedestrian, it's no justification if, say, he's had a fight with his wife that morning, so has that on his mind. So no, if you come here asking me questions about doping, I can't let that offend me. It's not like I'm not guilty of anything. It's maybe not very nice or pleasant if someone's done nothing and then they get questions about doping. If you go asking Formolo about doping, it's perhaps not fair. What does he know about it? But I don't have a leg to stand on.
Formolo fa domande di doping, sarebbe brutto. Perché lui che cosa ne so. Però il fatto a me è giusto così.
Well, interesting stuff there from Pierre Pelli. Before we go, Daniel, let's look ahead to tomorrow's stage. And Orica Scott have had a good day with Caleb Ewan winning the stage, and they'll be right on it tomorrow, won't they, with Adam Yates currently in third place overall. And it's a day maybe when he will try and do something.
Well, Lionel, Matt White, the director sportif, was already looking forward to the Peschici stage this evening. I asked him what we should look forward to.
As far as we're concerned, tomorrow we're looking after GC. Okay. So we won't be taking any responsibility tomorrow to bring it back for a sprint. It's an interesting one because Gaviria is in super shape and he does climb better than most sprinters. Could be a good stage for him. But as someone punches, the problem is there's not a Gilbert, that sort of type of rider here. There's some good guys here, but I think it's pretty open for tomorrow's stage. With the gradient on the finish line, the GC guys will have to be in the mix anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised if you'd be looking more for the punchy edge sort of GC guys. But the GC guys will have to be there because there potentially could be splits.
Terrific day for Matt White there. His rugby league team has won. And Caleb Ewan has won, and the Giro really starts tomorrow for Adam Yates. Before we go, I should just say tomorrow we will be announcing, I mean, there'll just be a drum roll when we announce the winner of the inaugural Giro 100 Pedaleur de Charme. The recipient of that honour, which is being voted for as we speak, but the poll will have closed by the time you listen to this, Lukas Perstelberger had a what looks like an unassailable lead, unless Luka Pibernik's family, you know, vote multiple times.
I hope there's going to be no Russian interference.
Now, we trust the results. We will trust the results that they're honest and true. So we will be presenting the T-shirt to the winner over the weekend. Should also just mention that Rafa, our sponsors, they're showing the Giro every day in their clubhouses, which are dotted all over the globe. And that, more or less, is it for tonight.
It is final, except we're in the backyard of some good friends of ours, the band Amaratera, who we mentioned various times already in the Giro, but they supply the music for our episodes in the Giro. Fantastic, evocative Puglian music, pizzica music. A lot of it's pizzica music. Pizzica is a traditional style of music that was created in this region of Italy, supposedly as a way of sort of as an antidote to spider venom. The legend has it that pizzica is a kind of vigorous shaking. And wow. The vigorous shaking supposedly kind of dissipated, dissolved the toxins of a spider's bite.
Goodness me. I mean, I've survived the sharks. I've survived the mafia. I survived a near explosion at a petrol station today when, to my astonishment, as we were filling up the car, the petrol station attendant was smoking on the forecourt, and she didn't seem to be bothered one bit that petrol and naked flames don't go terribly well together. Now you're telling me I've got to watch out for spiders. Well, let's play out with Amaratera and Daniel. I'll see you tomorrow.
See you later.
A reminder that you can watch the Giro d'Italia live and exclusive on Eurosport and Eurosport Player. UK viewers can also watch highlights of each stage at 10 p.m. on free-to-air channel Quest. There's a special offer for the Eurosport Player, £29.99 for an all-access pass for the rest of 2017. Details of availability, compatible devices and full terms and conditions can be found on the Eurosport Player website, uk.eurosportplayer.com. You've been listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA. Thanks to them, and thanks to our other sponsors, Science and Sport and Maserati, and to All Press Espresso for supporting our morning show, Kilometer Zero. The music in this episode is by Amaratera. Thanks to them. Thanks to those who helped keep us on the road, in particular David Luxon, Jonathan Rowe, Nick Christian, and Simon Gill. And thanks to Adam Bowie, who produced this episode. Una cantina essere e l'altra frase non si ritira a casa morre ad ucciso apri mogliere mia non si ritira a casa morre ad ucciso apri mogliere mia e fammi pur caso cozze ci tene cozze cozze mi scinde non spigudeci cora cozze ci tene cozze non spiego di scicora se lo mangiano le femmine non voglio che te apro che sta stizzata ed è che non mi dici ed è che non mi dici non voglio che te apro sta stizzata e le canone dici c'è un caso di stato
lo stato alla cantina che ha troncato tu mi ero camaccoto tu mi ero camaccoto su stato alla cantina che ha troncato tu mi ero camaccoto e mangio un brilegato
cozze ci tene cozze cozze vicine non spico de cicora non spico de cicora cozze ci tene cozze, cozze vicine, non spico de cicora, se non mangia tu le femmine. Non me ne curo no, che t'han regalo, basta che non ti strudo, basta che non ti
cresciuto, non me ne furono cada un precato, basta che non si sciuto, voi carcerato, cozze ci tene cozze, cozze mi scende, lo spicco de cicora, lo spicco de cicora, cozze ci tene cozze, cozze mi scende, lo spicco de cicora.
Se lo mangiano le femmine.